Interrupting the current neo-coronial cricketism to bring you Behind the Woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 445. For those of you in the future that would ever get to search us out, we come up on the search engines relatively okay, but not always. Sometimes you put better Real Liberty Media. This is where we're broadcasting out of. And thank you to Grimner. And hope you are doing better. Didn't hear from you last week. Send our prayers to your better health. But looking around here in this world, you know, again, the resistance is slowly coming. I'm finally able to see it, but I don't know if we really have the point done. And I've been trying to explain to people the better, more narrow path, the one that gets you to where you want to go. And I find that some people, I don't know what to say. This is not a judgment. This is just what goes on. People are good, willing, they're stable, they want to get this thing done, but they don't understand what our problem is. They don't understand what we're up against. And I hate to use the word form because everyone's looking for the form, the piece of paper that has all the places you fill in. The form is the black and white I talked about, the statutes. And if you read very carefully, it'll explain, I think, most all of it to you. The principles underlying it may not be obvious, but they are there to guide us. That's why I tell you about the habeas corpus. The form is in the words of the statute or the rule, depending on what state you're in. That's what you follow. And so the hitch and the giddy-up so far with this affidavit that I have offered, and I can't remember now where the link is. It's on a website. For people to help save their position, and this is really what it's about. You're just saving a position. You have a 50-50 chance when you file the form to get just accepted, or you are going to at least establish your record to give you a defensible position and actually move into retaliation and discrimination, which you don't have when you stay quiet with those jobs. This is going beyond the job as well. We will find, and I'm going to get to this pretty quickly. I got lots of things to do again. So much to talk about. Now, I do want to touch one of the hitches in the giddy up. People that are filling out the form, as I've been explained to me, some are being challenged and then some are being accepted. And the real problem is the ones that are being accepted because the people, as willing as they are to defend themselves, don't understand what the affidavit says right up front. It establishes that there has been no burden met by the employer to even ask for that point. To ask for the exception, to ask for anything. Where do I get that? Well, I wrote that challenge up front in the affidavit. There's two affidavits now because we found out how the system wants to respond. They tried to deny the first, so I came a little bit stronger, and then I brought in the federal jurisdiction to show that they didn't have a right. And it's also not the power of the state. It's in the power of the federal government to guide labor, Title 29. It's all there to be written. I wrote the savings clause, if you will, for all your so-called common law rights and all these things and these statutes. It's right there in the code. I didn't know that, but I did know that there was a burden. And I talked to you about burdens. So you fill out the forms, and this will happen. Well, I don't care where you go and what you do, you'll address an official. If it's a method, is to challenge where they got their jurisdiction when they have not stated it, or what they stated was incorrect, or it cannot be found. And all this has to happen on the face of the documents. We don't make it up. Our problem is we use our mind about what should be going on and what we think is going on instead of seeing the writing that's made by those that have the burden. In a judicial sense, and even for the records that you make, everything in a rule of law and democracy world is reduced to writing. I think that's a great thing. That's the objective basis of the record that's gone on. It's also somewhat permanent, to the extent that you can adjust or amend or rescind or things like that. There's some remedies for mistakes. Mistakes are not necessarily fatal. The mistakes you make that you don't fix are fatal to that point. That the affidavits I'm offering challenge and put the burden back on the employer. Anyone, and this is the problem, anyone whose affidavit's accepted and then doesn't maintain that line and agrees to mitigation measures, such as is going on, people are being asked, okay, well, we accept your affidavit, but what mitigation measures will you accept to wear a mask? Will you do this? Will you distance? Will you do that? Will you test every 2 weeks? All that is a mitigation measure, and as soon as you say you agree to discuss that and negotiate that, you have essentially eliminated your exception. And I can't stress this enough. This is to the wall with these folks. You cannot consent at all. Your answer in that case is you didn't demonstrate the business necessity as required by the Department of Labor. You translate the whole thing now by the second document, the second affidavit, which is actually the covering affidavit. You translate the problem back onto that the Secretary of Labor said so. And you give them, if you have nothing else to say, you say that there's three things that you have to do, and that is to demonstrate the necessity. And the Secretary of Labor says you also have to produce the financial hardship it is to you relative to that necessity that I am causing. That causes also a problem with the employer. I just laid out four things. That would be the minimum you would respond with. You don't respond with that you would wear a mask. Why people doing a religious exemption would say they would wear a mask when there's a religious proof that says you shouldn't be, it, to my mind, negates your whole entire religious exemption, whichever authority you're using, federal or state. And so your answer isn't to negotiate. Your answer is you didn't do, and now you for those of you that are afraid that of imposing your own power, you translate to another authority that everybody is subject to. You translate that over with the Department of Labor secretary says this. Where do I get that? Right from the website. Right from the website upon the subject matter of an exception for a religious exemption. Again, federal uses exemption. States can use exception. And I explained that in past broadcasts. You don't get accepted, get your affidavit accepted, and then mitigate and negotiate. That essentially negates it. And they're going to come back in lots of places to reassess that. In some regard, I'm not telling you it's done. I'm having a little bit of difficulty now. If you've already abandoned your religious exemption by mitigating, and you didn't require that the business or the state produce the necessity to do this to you, that you caused, again, all of the Title 29 tells you all this. I don't really have an answer for that. I'm working on it. I'll come up with an answer, but my mind is probably overwhelmed with the idea of how do people take the power and hand it back immediately without any thought. And my problem with that is that's my problem. I've been attempting for years to explain to people how you maintain your own power, how you keep the tennis, if this is a tennis game, you keep that ball on the other side of the net. It's about the burdens. And so you don't have to come up and say, now if you hold your line that the law says you hold and you get violated, now you move into the group of people that were as if they're, you worked as if they're exception was not accepted. Now you have, in the document, the affidavit says the employer or the state would be subject to retaliation and discrimination. Then you have to go read, and you should have done this before, read where you would go in case it is denied. And we've had a problem. Some people went right to the Department of Justice. There is no provision to go to the Department of Justice when you get denied. That's not a crime at that point yet. You have to do the process. The appeal, the administrative process says you go through the agency that has the power to oversee. And so your complaint would go through an administrative complaint. And we've had an example now, I think two of them, where the Department of Justice did answer. They answered correctly. They answered, they had to be careful and make a disclaimer. Their disclaimer is that, well, we're not saying you don't have a merit, but we're not the department to come to first. You need to inquire with the Department of Labor or the EOCC, I think it is. So they give you the half-right answer to what you need to do where you've been violated. You don't really need to go to the EOCC when you have the answer. And the EOCC, by my estimation, and told you before on record, they don't make the right answers. Not relative to your rights. And so we now go back over and the DOJ says go to the DOL, the Department of Labor. That's the correct answer. Where do I get that? What do I know? Why am I so arrogant to say so? I'm not. It's on their website. You don't make this stuff up. You just follow the path that they're giving you. That's the due process path. The documentation and affidavits are the due process path initiation. The due process that's required, the lawful due process, is the burden is initially on the employer. The burden is initially on the state. Whether you want to go to necessity and business or the police power prerogative the state wants to wield. You'll look very carefully. The state's not wielding police power prerogative. They're assuming you're going to accept that that's okay, but they're actually dealing, the state is dealing in through their their departments and agencies as an employer, following everything, actually right to the T, as I told you last week. And so maybe I went way too far here. Maybe not. I'm telling people here, if you will listen, please, follow what you're supposed to follow here. Don't give up your power when the burden, when you've knocked the ball back on the other side of the net, keep it there. Let them fumble around with the ball. You don't have to make an agreement. There's no negotiation to have. Until what? Until they've made a demonstration of the necessity to have to. Again, go right back to the list. That's a financial hardship. This is by the Department of Labor's website. That you caused. This is in the law that you caused, what is that, 653 in Title 29? Or 654? I think it's 653. Number 4, it's in the affidavit as well. And that causes a problem with the employee. And I've asked you, how does someone who's healthy, someone who's never been declared to be at risk, how can that one be, you, a healthy party, be the problem? And so if you're asked that question, what are you negotiating for if you're not the problem? And so I needed to clear this up because this is a very big step. You have the power, and then we readily, as a people, hand it back. So let's go through why is part of that. You're looking for something to invoke as well. Well, we talk also in the affidavits, there was a non-fraudulent demonstration needed to be made. That is in the communicable disease statute. I've been asking everyone to go read for yourself so you see the black and white. So medication measures are way down the line. And any purported mitigation measure presupposes a medical report with your name on it. Your name. Those my listeners that are listening. Your name had to be on that. However that was generated, it had to usually be, the statutes will say, a medical profession. Somewhere has your name on it. These mitigation measures are tied to that. Why isn't the first question to any challenge to restraint on your liberty in any degree whatsoever, even to respond, where you know when you read, you find out a medical report is required in law, and you respond where that medical report is in law and it's not in evidence here, why are you vilifying me? And if you're vilifying me without evidence, then that's amounting to an extortion of the property of my livelihood, the property I have in myself, and it's a coercion of the rights I have to assert. For someone who doesn't have demonstrated the necessity to impose upon me at all. Now, I said extortion and coercion. Go look at your state laws. You'll see exactly what that is. You'll see, as I mentioned, particularly extortions on property, coercions on the rights that are either appurtenant to that property or are the antecedents of that property or a part of that property. And it's a subtle difference between a part and appurtenance. And I have to deal with this in our complaint with the Forest Service. There's things that are they're integrated with the granting of something. They're inherent with that. And then there's those that are appurtenant that are extensions in the fulfillment of those things. You have your rights, you have the property, the right of your property to yourself, and you have the right of property to livelihood, so the extortion becomes pretty prevalent. When they have not demonstrated a medical report that starts the process, why are we talking about mitigation? When the mitigation, it presupposes that report. So before agreeing to do anything such as wearing a mask, keep your distance, or threatened with a jab, that's what you have to have. The employer or the business who wants to keep you if you're going to be a client has to demonstrate. I've already talked about all of this before. Why people take up the paperwork without fully understanding it has always been a marvel to me. I understand people think they know what they're doing, but we are totally and woefully ignorant of the system that, and I can't say this is actually that bad. I'm showing you how it actually is really good, but they do not rely on it. They make stuff up. And I'm asking you to stop making the stuff up you can go in some regard trust that the black and white has been, to my mind, has been pretty clearly straightforward and pretty clearly protective. It's the fact that no one is recognizing it. That is our problem, and we are allowing that. These lawless occupiers are operating under a color of authority. They're only interested in control, not preservation, prevention, excuse me. Prevention is what's required underneath that communicable disease law. The jurisdiction of which to do the duty to prevent is started by that medical report. And your demand would be, where is the necessity? You're not even telling them you're waiting for the medical report. You're holding that back. You're waiting to see what their answer is. You don't want to give them an answer. You don't want to give them a way to go. They are already supposed to know how to do that. Again, you can be knowledgeable. It doesn't mean you spew your guts and disgorge everything you know. Your knowledge is what you're using in order to protect yourself. And you know the answer to the question before you start. That's what the study does. Where's the necessity? You have not demonstrated the necessity. They talk like they don't know what they're talking about. They probably are truly, because they're talking with a human resources director that hasn't been told about all this stuff. You're now in somewhat of a controlling seat to sit back. You just have to watch how they violate you, because that's probably what's going to happen because of the dynamic and pressures that are going on. When you have companies like healthcare systems that are assuming state power, we are in a really whack system. You're really going to have to step back and not commit yourself before they have done what they need to do. To know there has to be the first medical report, to know they have to demonstrate the necessity, is two different points that are going to get you to the same answer. What is the necessity that you're even asking me? You don't have to go through anything saying that what they have to offer to you to fulfill the burden to demonstrate the necessity. That was all supposed to be in the record already. And what are you doing? You're identifying nothing has been done objectively. There is no lawful due process. There's no right to impose a lawful due process. And so I'm seeing a real disconnect. You file a paper. You generally file a paper. You don't understand what's in it. And then you break what you've done. It's kind of back to the I will hand someone a loaded gun to go defend themselves, and the first thing they do is they shoot themselves in the foot, or maybe even shoot the cat. They don't know how to wield the instrument of their defense. And so, this is a warning about where our minds are, about where we think our power is, and it certainly isn't coming out in some exercise that we know. It's coming in, we jump way back too far into what was a failure, and we believe that's okay. Let me get to the other side. Those that don't, that are rejected right off the bat, you cannot just go to a complaint. Now, that's the other little interesting problem. This is a procedural thing. I've always said make a record. The fact that you got denied is bad enough, but what you want to deny, you want to set a record for after they do that, is now you make the list that the affidavit shows you to make in bullet point form of all the things the employer or the state, as your employer, has denied to you. In other words, they've denied to you that they were required to meet the burden to produce the necessity. That's the first one. You go right down the list. The next one is they didn't declare the financial harm to you that you caused. That's the savings clause to your rights. And they didn't show how a healthy person is interfering with their business, with their employee relations. That's the first top three you do. Then in the affidavit, there's a gob more. You can put 10 or 15 different things. You list those on a return reply when they deny you. But they did not do all of these things before they did their denial. You establish exactly what they do. You keep a savings provision for you can expand, you reserve the right to expand this list as this moves forward. Once you then send them, you give them the notice that they've done, they failed to do their duty, you give them a certain, it's what they call a seasonable time, a proper time of response. You can put that in your letter of response in your bullet points, and you send that to them, respond in 14 days with you, how you didn't, and show cause if you want, how you aren't in violation. Once they haven't met that, or they haven't come back and said, oh, we realize we have to do some more work. If they don't do any of that after the end of that time, then you take that and your affidavits and you go to the Department of Labor and whether you fill out their form, I don't know, I haven't analyzed that part. You make your administrative complaint with those three documents. And you now have a record showing that the burden that was on the government or the employer was not fulfilled. So there is a short form on what people need to understand they need to do. If you didn't understand what I'm saying on those steps, okay, that's fine. Go find them. It's written down on what you do. Where can you go? You go to your local state rules might have something. I'm saying go to federal, so you want to see Title V. You certainly want to go to Title 29, go to the Department of Labor and find out what their process is. Seek out the rules they're using for the hearings on the complaint. And you allow that agency to take a look at what's going on. You're establishing that your first establishment is that the burden was not met by the employer or the state. It's really the same approach, but you have to approach this affidavit and you keeping your jobs based on these exceptions as a completely different thing than if we were just attacking the state against their failure to demonstrate a non-fraudulent agency. Within the labor confines and subject matter, this affidavit works particular to that. And so you have to take in everything that I think I did in those affidavits, they're integrated. You can't just piece them apart. You have to really look at them as a totality of a statement. And so that becomes another type of analysis. And I usually will address that when I have particular questions. So anyway, I think I'll stop right at that point. Don't do mitigation measures if whoever it is imposing you has not demonstrated the necessity to even have you make a comment. Why are you speaking before they have proven their need? And then you need, again, necessarily it's in writing, and necessarily that's your chain of evidence. That's your record. I think that's a good thing. It's a pain, but it's a good thing. And so, that again, just a little frustrated a bit because people, you know, we want this done. We want the pain to stop, but they're jumping way too fast before they have some basic understanding of what they've been handed and what their obligation is to do in protecting themselves. The interesting thing is what they have to do is not do anything more than say, you didn't demonstrate a necessity yet. And you just don't lead. I say, at least go three. Threes are good. Groups of three. You can do the three. Go right off the Department of Labor. So you aren't even making the words up. I think we're talking in the RLM chat with Free Enslaved. It's copy and paste and plagiarize. Yeah, that works good out of the black and white, not someone else's stuff on the internet. Go to the black and white. Learn the process there. And when you see the words, you go ahead and copy them. If they're in the statute and there's a defined term, use that one because your dictionary is useless to you. And I also say, because I'm doing this right now as I refine my complaint down, what better words can I use is one of the last steps. Going back in through the statutes and read very carefully, if there's terms that are being used, I adjust what I thought I wanted to say. If it's exactly what I should have said, but in a different term, I use the black and white term. I don't make it up. And I can tell you something, there's a whole other power that starts to develop when you go there. Because there is some stuff that's in these black and whites that are really instructive when you see what they did, why'd they say that, what they were doing. And more importantly, these terms are tied to duties and obligations and standards that the official is supposed to meet. And that's what you're after. The burden of the employer is to make a necessity. That's their duty and obligation. You just hold to that. If it doesn't go anywhere, you're dealing with a criminal anyway. You better start making your record. Whether that goes all the way to the DOJ eventually, I'll agree with the DOJ. We can't say you don't have a meritful claim, but it's not for us now. Everything in due course. By due process. And I know it's extended and I know it's not immediate I got us into this immediacy, but that's what works the best. That's been what's been working for me, at least until I see some better information that helps. I have to just continue to tell you what works so far works best. You really have to analyze all kinds of things. So, I mean, my mind wants to go, there's lots of discussion on what I can tell you. I even warn people against doing certain things, because if you look down the road, if you haven't positioned yourself and they get you out of position, your remedy may not work. You have to factor that in. It still may be that you need to do that, but you're going to have to factor in the possibility that one of your remedies may not work when you get there because you walked into a gray area. And that may be part of the tactic. I don't know. I like to avoid the gray areas as much as it's tough enough. But let me stop right there. Listen to the power you have and execute upon the power. In the point of filing, when you finally file your affidavits, and I even think you can do it now after the fact, even if they're trying to get on you and saying you don't have your job, just file whatever exception you can. Get yourself back in that game. Don't walk away with an agreement that they had the right to do that. And you assert that, and then you, all your work is making sure that you don't say anything more until they demonstrate on a piece of writing that's right, correct, where their necessity is. And when they do that, they try to assert you still have a say whether or not that's right. You make an issue out of that even so. So there's the war is in the battle of the responses. And the war is won when they're holding a grenade and it goes off in their hands because they couldn't throw it back. And hopefully that happens in the first move that's decided in your first affidavit, and then you just standing there and just saying, well, you still got the grenade. You tried to throw it back, but it's actually still in your hand. You never gave the release. You never said you could release that. That's all the work you really have to do. And if you notice what I'm saying, I'm not, oh, look at my constitutional rights. Oh, you violated me. My bodily integrity, my livelihood. No, it has to do with the due process required and understanding what the burdens are and where they are and who has them. And if it's not on you, you keep it on the other side. If it is on you, you shift it as quickly as you can and you send it back. In this case, they put an imposition on you before. That's a harm. That's an irreparable harm that you even now have to deal with it. And then you say that they didn't keep the burden before. You're already two steps ahead if you understand what I've been saying and what those affidavits actually do and what any affidavit you should do. Okay, I said that twice, but it actually meant something different in each resolve. But let me move over now into my tabs because it always goes so far. I've been trying for years to explain. I'm not trying to prove I know more than anybody. I'm saying that there's processes that are there. You don't have to make them up. You do have to get more organized in your thoughts. You have to, in a way, step back and rethink about how you're going to approach this because someone's coming to attack you. You're now in a hand-to-hand battle for no reason, is the point. And so while you're defending yourself in the hand-to-hand battle, you're in paper form saying, you don't have a right to be here. And here's the deal. There is supposed to be a witness to that trespass. Because that is what it is. It's a trespass. And when you bring in coercion and extortion, you now bring it, you rise it to a bare naked trespass, which doesn't require intent, into a criminal trespass. And when you go read your statute on what constitutes criminal trespass, you see the black and white, you read the elements that's already written there, you'll realize what I'm saying. You'll know why I'm saying it that way. So, moving on, and how this law is supposed to work, and the injustice in us, especially in something that's supposed to be fundamental, protected, antecedent, and outside of the control of the government, this decision came in here about a month or so ago. Now, time flies, but I just came across it. Handgun sale ban to under 21-year-olds is unconstitutional, appeals court says. And what I hadn't really, what do we know? What do we see? How much can we keep up with? But I hadn't known, but this law that they challenged, well, we've heard a couple of these stories come along where 18-year-olds are denied the right to buy guns or the Walmart case and all this other stuff. But they sue for a discrimination instead of something else. Now, I'm not going to go down that side, but what they're up against, you see, is the states can make their laws, but there's also a federal law. And then you have to, these laws sit there, and they're deemed lawful. They're presumed lawful until you throw them off. If you didn't understand, this is another style of prison. But this law that's being challenged today, in 2019, I suppose, has been on the books since about 1968, I think it was. And we're finally getting to the challenge. And now this is still only in appellate court. But they're saying, and I didn't read this, again, I want to go to so many three things here. Go read the rule, the decision, and see what it makes sense to you, whether the rationale is good. Could it survive the Supreme Court challenge that 18 to 20-year-olds would be placed essentially in a discussion, a rhetoric here, of second-class status relative to the right, which is also argued as the, in this regard, and it's stated through CNN, interestingly. Presentation here is that that would be antecedent right. That would be inherent in everybody, no matter what your age is. And this is more of my thought, but I'm not saying that I'm saying, rah, rah, this is the win. What I'm saying is that it took a law went on the books to ban certain people in society a fundamental right to defend themselves of capacity and age as well on top of it. Obviously, we're not talking about so-called children here. We're talking about not minors, but no, not the ones that dig the dirt, minors. We're talking about people of a understood of legal age. These are also the people that go to fight in wars that they're conscripted to, however the cause is, just or not. But it took all this time since 60-some, 68 or so, to say, oh, this is unconstitutional. You can't do this to 18 to 20-year-old. It took a woman, a young woman, to say so. And what's sick about this is she was denied a gun to protect herself against somebody who wanted some relationship problem that she had. That gave her the standing, though, didn't it? And this is where we have the opportunities if we'll step up to accept it. I don't like any of this, but this is what the reality is. We don't have the rights that we have as a presumption. We only have them after we can defend them by somebody else's opinion. And this is why I find, to go jump quickly, when I found a statute in a state law that precluded a judge from interfering with the patent, the land patent, they have no power, no jurisdiction to touch it at all. I realized that was the antecedent power of the prerogative disposal sitting there. That's not even constitutional. The laws are constitutional, but the antecedent right wasn't. That was a more of the privilege of accepting, of doing the work it took to get the patent that was issued to them as a grant. That rule, that law, excuse me, that statutory observation that a judge doesn't have jurisdiction is the evidence that, of the things I'm telling you that you look for. How the Supreme Court has a decision on these things, I'll never know. But they do, and it takes this long to get at it. That we have, if you will, a somewhat of a victory in the sense that it is now acknowledged, at least by this appellate court, that 18-year-old to 21-year-old law, laws banning 18 to 21-year-olds from acquiring guns is unconstitutional. Why it took this long to say that, I don't know. That's one of our problems. But I don't know how far this goes. Apparently, there's quite a bit of gun issues coming back on the horizon. They mention here is partly because of Trump, and that Trump put lots of judges in that were, if you will, conservative-minded. What that has to do with it, I don't know. But it's a reality. It sits there to do what it does. And that's one of the considerations in this world. That I guess the other thing here is it took a young girl who was denied the right to protect self-defense in order to take a case, found some attorney that did the right, at least so far, did the right arguments, and now is propelling this forward to try to get back what I would have thought was inherent in everybody that was capable. Now, and our time scheduling is so screwed up. Early on in the nation, 12, 13 years old, 9, if you were capable of carrying a gun to hunt, your father taught you, your mother taught you, that was it. That's all you needed. The point was is that they didn't look at you and presume you to be a danger because you had a firearm, what they call a firearm. The arm they've now defined as a federal facility called a firearm. It's a special thing. So you had the right to bear arms if you were capable. What the point was is that you didn't cause harm, and that wasn't presumed. This has also been lost. So enough here. Handgun sale ban to 20-year-olds is unconstitutional. You think, and look at all the time. Another thing I want to point out here that new to me, kind of beyond me, I just don't have the ability to keep up anymore. But I thought this very important. It's a small window of time. You only have a week or two now. And if I understand this correctly, it's going to take more than you just filling out an application, although that might start the process. for a nonprofit and non-commercial radio license. There's a little window that the FCC is opening up. If you live in the United States, depending on your location, and this is, you've got to search all this down, this may take a licensed radio engineer and even an attorney. I don't know yet. They've really kind of bumped the requirements up, or you're going to need to know a whole lot real fast. But if you can pull this together, I think it might be something that you might consider. It's a way to get out into the universe of your area and become a broadcaster, if you will, on the status that this is non-commercial, non-profit. I don't see how that's too hard to figure out. My suggestion would be not necessarily to go 501c3, maybe move into the 508 and be the same. You're considered the same, but you don't have the, those are a little different. They're treated different. They're more of the antecedent, the recognition. Anyway, that's for you to figure out. I'm not going to sell that. This is really high-level reading and understanding and implementation that I don't want to get in the way of you doing, so you know what you're doing. This is into the serious area. But if you live in the United States, depending on your location, if you happen to search your radio dial, you'll encounter numerous broadcasts, but also plenty of static. Those bands of white noise represent stretches of radio spectrum where the stations could exist, but doesn't. The Federal Communications Commission has announced, and this link gives you some links to those announcements so you can track back through how to get this done if you're interested. They announced that a new application period for non-commercial educational, what they call NCE, FM radio licenses will open later this year, offering applicants the opportunity to claim some of those frequencies below 92.1 on the FM dial. The period runs 1 week from November 2nd, oh, it's even less days, to November 9th. You only have a week or so at the latest. So November 2nd to November 9th, these are strict administrative limitations. You have to meet them. I don't know what the application would take. I don't know what it requires. I do know, though, that if you put in a substantial application, you can amend that, I suppose. But you're up against other people and priorities. Don't want to make a big problem out of it. If you're interested, this is a very interesting window. This didn't happen. This doesn't happen often. It happened once back in 2010. This, I think, the NCE stations are a little more complex, but they have more, they're not a low power station, I don't think. I think that's a little bit different situation. Those might be available as well. Don't know what your interest is. I found it interesting. It's beyond me, though. I realize lots is beyond me anymore to keep up with. If you can pull some people together and your expertise in this area and you want to start grabbing up however you would do this, and start making your broadcast systems, you will then have a way to your communities. These are not as large, I don't know. They're not as large, I don't think. But if you're up in an NCE at 92.1 FM, I don't know why you have too much of a limitation. You're going to have a fairly decent footprint for those areas you can get in. So enough there. If you're interested, you get the link. See what you can do. This is another opportunity for those of you that are not adverse to making a license with the federal government. And, some people aren't. I'm interested even so, but I have a different view. Like I said, be careful on going through a 503, and maybe you reduce some of your baggage and liability in those statuses. Supreme Court declines to block Maine COVID-19 vaccine mandate for health workers. So this is what I was predicting a bit here on how this would work. There was an emergency request by health workers to the Supreme Court because the state of Maine did not allow a religious exemption, and the Supreme Court wouldn't take the case on an emergency. They're saying they're going to let the lower court deal with it at this point on the terms that it was done. And so my point here again is if you're in a state like Maine, you either jump in on and you make a defense against the fact that they violated federal law, make your case, put it in anyway, and then when they deny, now you go against them for what, as I've been telling you, you become the same one, or you bring up the fraud. You say they have not produced the necessity. That hasn't happened in Maine, so that court is being blind, like you said, the justice is blind to justice now, but they're not having to look at it. Massachusetts, right next door or so, they have Jacobson. In fact, an emailer, I hadn't thought about it before. They're in Massachusetts. I said, you're in a prime place. You're right in the court system that declared that. That court system, if you get down around page 36 to 39, they said they have to hear these cases if you present it as an oppression or fraud or deprivation of duty. And so there's a particular avenue, but that's, again, the judicial, not the exemption side. What I'm saying about the fraud would be in conjunction with the institution of an exception or exemption certificate request. They call it a request. I would call it a demand. And so you have to be very careful in what you're doing. But Maine, that federal court has the control. I'm assuming that the attorneys have not declared the fraud. The Supreme Court says, well, the lower court's got this. And so it kind of went the way I've said. And it's just looking at what the battlefield is I've been telling you about. South Dakota Governor Noem signs order to protect state employees from Biden's vaccine mandate. Between these two, you see you need to be in states where the governor, the politics, is conducive to helping to protect. You see between the two states the diametrically opposed view. And this was part of, the sale of the union of states where you can move around if you want to. I don't know why people would want to move around. It's contrary to what the Congress wanted to do with the mineral estate, where they wanted to get miners to settle where the minerals are. That's totally apolitical. And so they're threatening people who are supposed to be settled by minerals with the political oppression that they would be finding there. So the whole problem of this nonsense of you go to the state that helps you think is best was really a fallacy as well. But who would want to do that to settle the place? You're always moving around. You're big a vagabond society. But this governor signs this protect the state employees. I'm going to be critical of this governor again. She didn't have to protect the employees, the state employees, from Biden's vaccine mandate, where she would declare that the health department has not found the infectious agent, and therefore the state of South Dakota does not see that there's the need to even have these mandates. They aren't even valid. That's all she has to do here. Why aren't they doing it, folks? And so I'm critical of this, even this governor. I have been. But here we have the diametrically opposed position between two states. All it takes your politics. That's supposed to be on health. You're supposed to have your health, but it's political. Now, what do I want to say there? That, you know, this is not in law. This is a political imposition. This is a political transformation. Climate change is politics. COVID is politics. Worse yet, they explained what it is because they're both actually economic servitudes. Where do I get that? Before COVID? I read about it. Which document, which little notice to us was what? Agenda 2030. I went all through that. Right in the middle, right? 75% of the way in, they tell you what your debt to the world is going to be. It's debt. Austerity, as you're told to do. As your behavioral condition is needed to be adjusted to. Where you don't have property. So this is all and eventually gets tied together, whether anybody sees it. And again, what I just told you, I wouldn't tell an employer. It's just something I stick in my back pocket to understand what I'm up against. What the force, the floodgate, if I break my own dam that's stopping this and protecting me, what that dam breach will bring upon me is all this stuff that I talk about, whether anybody can really see it or not. So I'm critical of South Dakota governor. All she has to do, as any of them, will say we have not identified the infectious agent upon which a mandate could be based. And who has the power? If she has the power to protect the state employees against Biden's vaccine mandate, she has the power to say it doesn't exist. She has the duty to say it doesn't exist. Why hasn't she? Those of you in South Dakota, why haven't you insisted? Just offer the suggestion. You don't even have to be, I know so much. Just say, have you thought that maybe you don't even have to deal with this abuse, Governor? Let me offer you a thought here. Just go to the statute that says that they have to have the medical report. They have to have an identification of an infectious agent. Can you tell me where in the state that's been done? And if it hasn't, Governor, can't you just say that there is no evidence of this infectious agent that everyone's scared of? Maybe you're going to find another truth back there. But the point is at least you're able to articulate to a governor that though she's correct to try and protect, she doesn't have to. And the question is, why then is she going down the more rough road and continuing to travel the rough road? There has to be some sort of benefit. Or she's just ignorant of this little check, the due process check. She's just overlooked that. That's fair enough. At that point, I'm wondering why they didn't listen behind the woodshed. It was all in the statutes, everywhere. Vaccine mandate. Archbishop Vigano asked Catholics to cancel priests, to take canceled priests into their homes. This then ties us back. This is a very interesting one. This is last week we had the lady that was having none of it. She was a nun talking out about this. We now see, and this was, I think, before the Catholic archbishop stating the same thing, outing within the Vatican system, outing this as essentially an atrocity against people, that the Pope is involved in it. Why is the Pope involved in it? I've talked about this in 2015. I talked about this in 2011. I've talked about it consistently throughout the time I've been broadcasting. The Pope is involved with these sustainable things. The Pope is involved with climate change. The Pope is involved with the UN as an observer with an interest there, has a legal representative there. I've gone through all of this. It makes sense to me that the Pope agrees to impose all these mandates that COVID is. It's just the extension. It's another weapon against people. The Archbishop is calling it out. Again, I guess I could read through this. He made some pretty powerful statements to be saying this. He's exposing the United States of America system, church system, as a pandering, if you will. Where he says worse than that. Anyway, so here we have again the Vatican. So there's some people inside systems that are part of the problem that are speaking out against it. And I'm just refreshed to see it. Again, they're not application. It's a statement, but it's not applying. It certainly starts to bring up the idea we've been talking about in the notice to us, the news, where this Vatican organism around the world will allow harm onto people. The Pope supports, and I think this is actually working to support, it's actually the other way around, the climate agenda. Why would a Pope who is supposed to be Christian embrace the green religion as well? When you think about it this way, stops making sense really, really fast. That I've been talking about and been showing this for over a decade, and understood it before I even started broadcasting. It's not even a question. It's like I'm wondering why I keep talking about it, but people seem to need to be reassured. And the example I talked about the first half hour of the broadcast, people not empowering themselves with their own power, they give it up immediately, I think is in us still. We need to educate ourselves, study better so that we get our power back. We don't agree. We're somebody like this archbishop saying, no, I see crime, I'm going to call it out. And so, interesting. I just find it fascinating. There is another thought, even within these systems. It's always refreshing to see. Then we see, it's interesting how the links kind of pulled together to bring up this continuing theme, the climate change issue. People don't see the connection to COVID. As I said, what Greta didn't get done in her promotion, they were going to get done in COVID, and I don't think I've been wrong in the least. And with all the agendas that we hear are supposed to be coming down, as in depopulation, diminishing your society. Before I forget, maybe just to say, you know, there's this thing about this diminishment. We're hearing about deaths, but one of the main problems that I'm seeing relative to an international problem where we have nations fighting with each other, in particular, let's say China. China made a suggestion, you take this sequence and you can go ahead and say that that's the pandemic and then you can make vaccines against it. Well, to me, this is much of a military operation. We know it's all military. The suggestion was accepted. Had the United States of America officials enforced the law, that suggestion would not cause an attack upon our nation. Nobody did. Now what happened? The military picked that up. They're now giving these injections. If they don't kill you, we're now finding, and we're going to get to it also, a doctor that comes up with this. If we didn't hear it before, we've heard all of this before, but now we need the officials to tell us, the doctors to come in, too late now. But it does it makes ultra-miniature micro blood clotting. Now, if you inject that in a fighting young man or woman, and you tax their system not to kill them, but you've as on the suggestion of China, you've injected your fighting force with something that makes your system, fills it full of micro blood clots. Not enough to kill you, but enough to diminish you. Do you think that that fighting force is going to be diminished when it needs to exert itself? Do you think that this very same thing that passes the blood-brain barrier that affects your brain, do you think those fighters are going to be able to think clearly? And as I've told you, once you have this, you don't know that. So there's another track here that's legitimate, but it was supposed to be stopped by our law. Everybody's committing treason who didn't enforce the law, and they've actually set the military up for a takedown. And so it's not like I dismiss any of this stuff. This is, and it operates, and I've got to move on, I'm going to get to it anyway. It operates as a venom, as a toxin. I've been fortified in this the whole time, it's coming back. But getting back to what are they doing? They're diminishing us. They're diminishing our population. They're diminishing the nation state, as they call it. They're diminishing the power of the states. And they're doing it for a supposed global order, not the New World Order. It's like this UN thing that's partly a part of it, part of which the Vatican's involved as well. Why would they want the population done? Because they don't believe in Christ. They believe in death. They believe in Gaia. And that's sacred to protect, even though there's no evidence that Gaia thinks one way or another. There's no evidence that Gaia didn't make man, if we want to go that way, because we're now human-centric, to make man to make plastic, which I thought was brilliant observation on the part of George Carlin. But we've made oil. We found oil so we can make plastic, because the Earth wanted plastic. If we want to go there, Gaia-centric, and so. We have a bunch of lunatics, even on their own theory. Either Gaia works and everybody on Gaia is happy and she wanted more, or they have now isolated themselves as the psychopaths that they are, and they have somehow this control thing that they think that they can do, and they've been using religion in order to cover for it, for the purpose of a different religion. But part of this thing is getting over to the people that are running this. This is Klaus Genghis Khan Schwab guys. 1,000 private jets will assemble in Davos to execute the Great Reset. At the start of each year, the world's elite hop into their private jets and descend upon Davos, Switzerland, a city prized not only for its luxury ski resorts, but also for hosting the World Economic Forum annual meeting. Also known as the Davos Forum, the event takes a different theme each year, providing a global platform for business leaders, government officials, academia, and other members of society to discuss, quote, critical issues. WEF is one of the key players behind the Great Reset, and with a new normal dictum that by 2030, you will own nothing and be happy. You'll also be in austerity. They call it prosperity, and they're in control, they get you out of your phones to a finite degree, and then they have you diminished, so you don't even know that. Your brain is fogged forever, apparently. Now, the point about this is that these people flying in, they're claiming in this 200 private jets a day pour into this place for the week that they do this. Over 1,000 jets coming in just to go talk amongst themselves on how they're going to control your life, creating what has been anticipated to be a larger carbon footprint, the very thing that they supposedly find abhorrent, than most other sources. And so, again, stop making sense. These people that are running your life because you don't have an officials locally to stop them and have all the power to, that have been persuaded by bribe, which is what I think is going on in South Dakota. She can deny it. Then all she has to do is say, no, we haven't found the infection agent. You're right. We don't need that bribe money. Folks in South Dakota, please, defend yourself. You have a willing participant, at least if ignorance is the answer here, and bribe is not. But Davos, all these people that are trying to run your life about keeping your use of energy down and carbon dioxide down, they're some of the major polluters in this. When it stopped making sense, you should start looking at this. On the other hand, it's those people that make that, they turn around and look at your life. California bans small off-road gas engines, including lawnmowers and chainsaws. I still can't believe I read this. California bans small off-road gas engines, including lawnmowers and chainsaws. And the big problem happened to be with people that are doing commercial gardening. They're now having to have battery electrical motors and batteries they have to carry around because the batteries don't last very long, not long enough. California moved one step closer to ending reliance on fossil fuels. What's the guys in the 1,000 jets at Davos going to do? Has to tell you you're going to live in a segregated society and you aren't part of it. You're the problem. And to end your demand, you're going to take away the machines that you need that make your life better and focus you in on another technology that's not actually any cleaner and actually causes more interference with your life. And no one seems to know how to stop this thing, in particular with states that will do this, like Maine or California. And it doesn't stop there. Washington was the premier first step into the problem. I told you that when it happened with this COVID. And then Oregon was right there. Well, that's the whole, they call it left coast. People mean it, right? So banning small off-road gas engines and lawnmowers and chainsaws. Wow, amazing. What are you going to do with electrical, how are you going to cut a tree down with an electric chainsaw? Even so, even if you want to agree with it, that this is even kind of something. My thought was, how are they going to be able to get miners with need pumps and water for their processing in the rivers? How are they going to get that to work? Well, if you look very carefully, there is a feasibility standard that has to be met. And so there's your little bitty in, maybe even against a fundamental right you have, I don't know. The point is, making it lawful to offer for sale, the devices and machines that make our lives right in favor of a different style that may or may not make it better, but will be, I can just tell you, until I see the better battery technology and maybe even motor technology, it's going to be more of a hassle, cost you more. How many batteries are you going to have to buy now? Oh, well, you can recharge them. Well, but where you get the power for that as well? And I'll tell you what, these batteries don't hold up. So there's a whole lot in my mind that came to bear, particularly to the mining, would be how do you run your pumps? There's a whole lot of stuff that miners need that only can be done by petroleum, if you will. There's not many places you can make water power. And then that's been frowned upon by these very same lunatics that'll fly their jets into Davos and those that are adherents of these same lunatics. In the vein, along the fossil fuels, and I told you they'd be attacking us in this regard. This caught my eye just as I was looking through stuff. IHS Market warns of Armageddon for U.S. propane market. The expanding energy crisis is causing propane to rocket higher, the research firm of IHS Market LTD warns of Armageddon during the Northern Hemisphere winter. We saw this one coming, folks. Everybody that has anybody looking knows and saw this coming, notwithstanding the inflation they were going to come up with. It's always amazed me. I understand that propane is one of the constituents. If you've ever seen a refinery or you've ever seen a flame on the top of a tall pipe around oil, that's part of what they're blowing off all the time. That we have a market loss, that we don't have the supply, is really has to be the most fundamental flaw I've ever known. But here they're coming after, they're going to make it so expensive that you can't afford it, or they diminish your life. We all need energy. It's one thing a modern society cannot get away from. And so we either adjust and move over and get away from it as best we can, or we're going to be taxed more by the increased costs. I don't know how to get around this part if you are involved with needing propane. And I say that because I need propane. That's part of what I use. I'm keen on the price of this stuff. That's probably why it caught my eye. But it was more important to me in Davos and the use of their jets. They're going to get their fuel. They're going to be sucking money from you so they can pay for their jet fuel, but they come over here and then they raise your price of propane where everybody needs to use it. And when? Right at the winter. Right in winter when you're going to need it the most. You are trapped. You're in the prison. I don't know how much of a counter we can do. Yes, there's some ideas we could do. Yes, there's gasification. There's gasifiers. Yes, you can try all that. How many could? How many would? The reality of it is, organized society provides very cool benefits. We can centralize things to make them more efficient. And these people that will fly their jets into Davos don't want you to have any of it. And we're moving in this concept, I don't know, again, I had these tabs on, moving into this underpinning of what's going on relative to the undermining of your life, the infringement of your life, all perfecting the plans that they had and the objectives that they've been working toward daily and with oodles of people to do it, the adherents, move into U.S. Smart City Consortiums, form partnership. Quote, key challenges include public perception around privacy. Now, this is another thing relative to the problem of them acquiring data. And they know they have this. And it's all about what? Perception. Perception management. They're going to get you if you don't keep an objective basis. Why I keep saying go to the black and white. That's the objective basis. Your perception is faulty. It's fallen. It's trickable. Magic proves that we cannot see things right in front of our face. That's what these people play in. Key challenges include public perception around privacy. And so this attack about smart cities, why would it be a challenge on privacy unless they're going to attack it? Smart is not intelligent. S-M-A-R-T has words after each letter. And there's a different list of those words depending on who you read. I've said, talked about them before. I won't go through that again. Understand, you're reading a mnemonic world that is coming in code, and it's going to impose this whole thing that they are telling you that they're going to attack and come after your privacy. And how they're going to manage it, how they tell you they do it anyway, is assess your response, analyze what your response is, then find the mitigation to defeat that. You see, am I spelling smart kind of the way that works? These letters are sitting right there that they, depending on how you load them up, will tell you what they're doing. Then they bring the solution to that. And a lot of that time, a lot of that is to set up a false warm and fuzzy that you want to get you to go ahead and answer before they show you how it works exactly as the COVID, how they had the right to do so, or that there was the actual need more than made up or make work. Or as I found, just look for the leverage funding that they're using if they've got anything established. And before the fact, they're asking for leverage funding. So American opposition to smart cities, in quotes, smart cities and all the risks associated with them has been a continuous. Nevertheless, proponents won't stop trying to convince citizens and legislators to embrace the fund and fund their vision. This is all about the exaction of the monetary system utilizing existing systems upon a false need. That opening statement tells you why would someone keep going to a legislator to keep asking for money? Why would they be doing that? Because that's what their object is. But their object is to fund what? What their object really is. These plans. And privacy is on the table for them. These people have no respect for you. If privacy is on the table for them to take from you, then what do you think your health is to them? Your right to your own determination. Your right to have your doctor and client privacy privilege, where you do have a say. See, that's also included inside your due process within the communicable disease law. The health official doesn't get jurisdiction. Your doctor is to have one, is to have the exclusive one. And when you start understanding how this works, actually apply it the way I've been telling you, I would hope that would actually empower you. Man, I got a whole lot I'm losing when I start negotiating with someone who doesn't have the right to negotiate with me. Not because I say so, because the law, the objective basis says that the balance of the negotiation requires that someone provide the standing for their issue. Got it? It all works the same as in judicial. The necessity gives them the standing to even have a say. The issue is what they state that is created that you can't counter is what you negotiate. That's all a court case is. Moving on to smart cities, they know they're here to analyze your resistance to the privacy. That's what they're coming to take. They are now in, again, they admit in that title, they're in perception management. A city's considered taking police out of traffic stops. This is an interesting problem. I don't understand how that's going to really be enforced, but anyway, they're going to do it, and they're going to make these people have some sort of power underneath their control. I don't know how they can actually do a traffic stop without identifying that you are in commerce. Go read the words. But anyway, the city of Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, last month became one of the latest localities to reimagine. Okay? Understand what we're dealing in here. Reimagining your world, not keeping the republic. Can they get you to buy into the illusion? Can you imagine, folks, the role of policing in traffic stops? The city council passed a package of police reforms that calls for unarmed civilians, not police officers, which is interesting because I think the state law would say they were peace officers. Little of that around. To enforce certain traffic violations. The move follows an April incident in which a white former police officer shot and killed a 20-year-old black man during a traffic stop. Okay, I need this to stop. There's a shift going on. I haven't thought through the potential opportunities in traffic court against this to negate this whole thing, but that's not for me to do for anybody here more than to say there is a reimagining of a new thing going on. Likely going to be tied to the future in your phones. These things are going to be there, but been operating to experiment with robots that do traffic stops so that you don't have to interact with even a man or woman. This gets us back to the idea I told you there's going to be a traffic light about everywhere, and when you violate the yellow light going across an intersection, they will immediately take a picture, identify who the car belongs to. That'll be the object, whether it's right or wrong. My fantasy thought about how this ultimately goes in the ultimate tyranny will be if you go across that intersection, they've already checked your bank account. And if you do not, they send you a message right away, made a violation, and then they check your bank account, and they say, if there's enough, they say, thank you for doing business with the city. Don't do that again. The next charge will be more, and your social credits are dinged. You can't have a hamburger this afternoon. Then they check, and you don't have a bank account, or you don't have enough. The hellfire comes from the drone. The little dog with a gun on it starts shooting at you, and you don't even make it across the intersection, and a crew comes out and sweeps you away because you're just not a good citizen. Then you receive a message on your phone, whether you get it or not, it says thank you for doing business with the city. Because why? No one in the government is doing due process. No one in the government is doing what the law says. Traffic is trafficking. Unless you're in commerce, you're not. Now, okay, I'm not going to get into a bunch of discussion. You filed the application. You've agreed that you're doing commerce. You've told them that they are now justly believing that you are in commerce. Now, the problem is when you haven't. Well, if you haven't, you're probably going to be attacked on the road because you're exercising a right. Now you're going to have to know your road law, not your motor vehicle code, your grant law. And that becomes a collateral attack against this thing. But moving over to here, they're going to reimagine your world. Reimagine what's going on. The illusion is coming upon you. And it's going to be coming right at you where they get the most money and they're trying to diminish this interaction with the cops. They're going to put the cops on other things. That's not going to be so nice either. So here, what are you going to do? They come on, they got someone that's not even a cop. They empower this civilian. Remember, I keep telling you, when they deal with you as a civilian, they're coming from a military perspective. Go look at the words, definitions on what they're talking about. You're in a military-occupied district. Now, there is grant authorities, which I have found, I believe, defeat. And when we assert those, even administratively, they at least tend to negate the charge. They defeat the ability to continue the charge. And so I better stop there because you're going to need a whole lot more information. So they're going after black men. This is Jim Crow today, but you're all that black man. You're all colored people under the law, Title 42, Section 1981. Go read it. Nobody has white privilege like the council culture that is bringing this whole nonsense on. We'll tell you that you are, again, blaming you, perception management. No one knows how to step up and say you don't have the right to say that. We get this into mining. Well, mining is not an economically viable thing. Well, it has nothing to do with being economically viable for the critic. It has to do in the law that you can't even get the mine until you can prove that it is. So his comment, not liking you being a miner because he's an environmental terrorist, isn't valid. He has no place, no standing to even have an opinion. Why do we entertain it as a population? A open question. How are we going to resolve this? Anyway, going on here. I read and read and read. they are reimagining society, smart cities, all this stuff. The Floyd thing kind of brought this on in order to bring this forward. You're moving from law. We've moved from law a long time ago, but now they're even removing the appearance of law. And what you thought I was joking about this AI-controlled drone that would take you out somewhere because you weren't the good citizen. Out pops this story. Robot murder dog. New thing to worry about as you fall asleep. Dogs have been long hunting companions for humans, so it makes complete sense that almost as soon as robotic quadrupeds were perfected, we'd be slapping big old guns on them. Boston Dynamics might not want anyone using Spot for evil, but they are plenty of other bot makers happy to make robo-dogs ready for war. I'll stop there. I don't know how many times I've covered this. North Dakota was the first state, right above, I guess, South, if that's what we talk geographically, above South Dakota. They made a legislation that would arm drones. This was years ago. Now we got Spot, but it's not Spot. Because Google don't do evil, do it. Competition. These are incredible machines. I can't tell you how thrilled I am to watch this technology. This is my little kid really loving what I'm seeing now. But it always goes to something destructive. And we're on the other end of this. They're making Spot-like dogs that have guns on them. And you can see they're already dealing in the military. Even I found a video. I didn't put it up for us. You watch, this is the Air Force of all. I thought they went in the air. A ground-based robo-dog that they are saying they're going to militarize. One thing of which they get to do is put guns on them. Is now my idea about you crossing across a street intersection on a yellow light and there's a camera and an AI that you're going to be taken out before you get the other side. That's not such a far-fetched thing. And guess what? When they start doing that, the rest of society will say, that was good. He deserved it. He must have done something wrong. And boy, I didn't have to have the cops out there to do it. They didn't have to risk their life. There will be an agreement to this thing. How many years have I been talking about this hellfire coming from the sky relative to the automaticity, if you will, of the smart city and you behaving and not doing things that you're not supposed to? And that even is wrong because guess what? You're not going to have a car that's yours, right? You're going to have no property and like it. You're going to be in a little rig that they move around, like Uber, that's controlled by the state based on your social credit. And in that regard, they're not going to hellfire you. They just move you from where you wanted to go. Well, you didn't have enough. You hacked your little carriage that we carried you around, and we're going to move you right on over into the jail. Or somebody made a complaint against you. We're going to now move you from where you wanted to go, and we're going to now arrest you. Our little car will take you there. So efficient. Anyway, robo murder dog, folks. If our nightmares weren't good enough. But RoboCop, boy, these movies. And like I said, I'm not much of a movie guy, but I'm told about them all the time. What I missed when I was out in the forest for a decade or so. Amazing. Robo-murder dog. They're setting these things up, and I can just tell you they're part of the smart system. They're part of the military telling you they're in the mega centers at least. And this is an interesting... Yeah, let's go to sleep on this one for a while, folks. Humanity is sleepwalking towards medical apartheid was sent to me. Asking if I had brought this up, and honestly, I don't remember. Yes, we talked about apartheid. Yes, I talked about it together. I'm not sure if I've originated that, if you will. Not that I'm, it's hard to be, did I originate or not? There's lots of people that have these ideas, but I did talk about medical martial law and the segregation of societies and the separation and the division, really. I'm heavy on the Zionista example and what Gaza was. So I'm not going to say an answer to that on the air. I'm not going to say that. I'll say at least I would probably talked about this. Now it's coming out a little bit more present. The state, a tragic state of affairs justified by a disease with a better than 99% survival rate cannot continue indefinitely. The title of this again, Humanity is Sleepwalking Towards Medical Apartheid. This references the New Zealand Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, asking a question about the possibility of the Pacific Island nation being fragmented into two distinct classes of citizens, the vaccinated and unvaccinated. Ardern didn't miss a beat as she responded with her trademark Cheshire grin, quote, "That is what it is. So, yep, yep." after being further prodded by the differential journalist as to why she favored apartheid, Ardern, who has already mandated vaccines for government employees or else responded unscientifically that, quote, people who have been vaccinated will want to know that they are around other vaccinated people. They'll want to know that they're in a safe environment. Now, here we go, back to not making sense. Can we stop now? But a little bit of analysis. How are the vaccinated threatened by the unvaccinated, first of all? Why would the government want to put you all together as well, unless they don't want you to start imposing the problem that they're invoking on you, and you want to be a separate class of protected, special, privileged people? Why? Because they want to keep you in the mindset and perception management, right? But this is coming out of a New Zealand, one of the heartbeats of the problem as far as the constraint of the future, applying these new normals, applying these conditions, that she is okay with segregating society, the new privilege versus those that were healthy. And that's okay. This is a psychopath. How people haven't thrown this off or started the movement, not just to protest, but actually come from all angles on this, and maybe more do what I'm saying to show there has been no law at all. There can never be order. How can a vaccinated party be imposed by someone who's not vaccinated is really an interesting problem, but that's not the all of it. The all of it is that they're doing this without demonstrating an infectious agent. And they talk about human rights and all. We got out of Victoria. It's interesting how these links came together. The Victorian Charter of Human Rights and Responsibilities Act, Australia's first state charter of human rights. I've told you, human is animal. It's rights that are invested in something, in a status. They are not inherent. They are not man. They are not anything like that. They are civil rights, if you will, government imposed and government controlled. And if you read through these very carefully, you're going to find out that these so-called human rights, when they find a violation, aren't a violation. They're the trigger for another process, a redirection. You don't get any benefit from it. It's for a suggestion to the occupier that it has to change its ways a bit if it wants to. So I offer these. They're talking, this woman in New Zealand's talking about this new and reimagining the world, contrary to anything anybody's ever thought. A psychopath that has been given license to be that and continues to be that, that's okay with segregating society over a nonsensical thing. And you go, everyone says, oh, we have human rights. No, you don't. Yeah, well, you have human rights, but it's not what you think. Because when you get through these documents, and I've offered them for you to read, you're going to see this is not a right at all. This is conditionable by the state itself. It shows you it's a civil right, not an unalienable right, not a God-given right. They don't exist. These people have set you all up so well, it's terrifying. And even so, I look inside for the narrow path. Well, first of all, you wouldn't invoke these at all. But so let me go over to the Charter of Human Rights Responsibilities Act of 2006 to prove out what goes on. Once this is triggered, you don't get protected. What happens is within 6 months after receiving a declaration of inconsistent interpretation from their Supreme Court, because the Supreme Court does not determine and denounce and strike a law. It just gives a declaration of inconsistent interpretation. Wow. There it is, written in black and white. Well, this one's in blue on the website. It's a link. You get to go there and read that. The minister administering the statutory provision in respect of which the declaration was made, must prepare a written response to the declaration, and B, cause a copy of the declaration and his or her response to it to be laid before each House of Parliament and published in the Government Gazette. Period. Did you hear anywhere that you have rights? Did you hear anywhere that there's a action you can take, that you have a remedy for that declaration of inconsistent interpretation? There's nothing to you here. Nothing in Victoria. By your rights, human rights declaration. You animals. You have no property already. It's not in you. It's in the whole people. The whole people is your legislators. And if they want, you'll see in the first document, if they want to address it, they can. Is not a prison I think I'd like to live in, actually. And so, I don't know what to say. It's right here for us to see the prison. It's right here to see these people, in one regard, maybe are not psychopaths. They're telling you about the prison. They're the wardens. And you may not have much you can do about it. And I'm going to say I would not, like I've told you, do not go through the human rights. Stop that. Find your organic documents. Start finding the obligations and duties through that. Find all the things they're not supposed to trespass and show them how they are. And stick to it. It's not that much, actually. I talk a lot, but it's not that much. As I told you, a complaint for a discrimination or a retaliation is simply 3 points up front, just 3 points, saying that the burden was failed on the employer's part and required a duty. You find the duty stat, that's 653 under Title 29. It's all there for us if we would just use it. Those are the securities that are built in, the objective basis in the black and white. Very few people will do that. And a couple of people, I think, are kind of, as I saw, if I was correct and I saw the chat and Free Enslaved make a comment. There's somebody out of Florida that I've talked with a long time ago. We disconnected the contact. I appreciated how he approached this. It was exactly what I was saying. He's going to the black and white. He slays them. From what I understand, I haven't found anything that he's done that didn't work. And all he's doing is going through the black and white. And so, I don't know what else. That's the objective basis, folks. I don't know what else to say. Why, it's why it's the important part at this point. While society goes mad. So you have this human rights, but do you want to actually engage it when you find out there is no point of action for you within it? When you have a so-called leader, a psychopath, saying, it's okay we have a divided society, and we're going to make privileged people, and those unprivileged people are going to pay for it. More than in money. More than in money. And so we go on and we see also now we go, what's this government? What's it willing to do to people? And again, this week I used a lot more of the links I was receiving. Although, like I said before, I get so overwhelmed. There's so much to do. I'm trying to tie together themes that come to my mind as the week goes on. And these kind of came together this week, so I selected these of a whole bunch of other topics I could talk about. At any rate, so I appreciate some of the help. But again, I can't reach all of this stuff. It's just too much on the broadcast time. I can go on and on and on with this stuff, folks, and it's really not. At some point, I wonder, how much more can I talk? We have to, when I get off the broadcast, I'm hoping you're taking your notes and you're applying what I'm saying to something you need. In particular, right now, it's about you losing your job or not, if that's what it is, or even like I said, a traffic ticket and how to do your stuff, whatever. You're going in and you're engaging to protect you right now and your future. But what will the government do? Interesting little document, GAO. United States Government Accounting Office Testimony, Human Experimentation, an Overview of Cold War Era Programs. This was a fascinating document to an extent that I cannot cover at all. And what it is, it's not like you say, oh, we knew they did this to us. It's what they know, what you can show they know that they continue to allow upon you. These people that are supposed to be your looking out, your leaders. And then you can bring out and understand what to expect, and I say, you take this, and you say, there is no way, with all these, you haven't developed a necessity, and even if you did, now we get to mitigation, the representation of the government here, are willing to hurt people. Here's the proof. And this document is where you might drop that off. Show cause how you can't, you're not going to do that. What are you doing? You're actually having them to show not that the stuff is safe, but that it's going to be safe for you, and that has to go through your doctor, and you're back to the communicable disease thing. You're back to where the authority is regarding this, and if it gets to the point when they've gone that far, you're going to be having a whole lot more information. I would include this piece of information. They say, what I got on the opening of this was just shocking a bit. I don't know what the context of this when I read this stuff, so it's kind of difficult, but it says, we are pleased to be here. We are pleased to be here today to discuss the use of humans in tests and experiments conducted for national security purposes by the Department of Defense and other agencies between 1940 and 1974. They're pleased to talk about this, folks. I mean, just to me, You know, I come from a different place where we had respect for people. What I see this stuff was in the time that I am living, that there's a whole parallel universe that actually is pleased to come talk about human experimentation. I said, where was I in the world, right? I really was just focusing on what I wanted to do, was completely oblivious to another reality. In fact, I as I started to see it, I started to move more and more into the forest, which I did. I lived there lived on the mountain for 7 years. And then what happened? They searched me out, and they started bugging me there. And I said, well, if I'm going to be bugged, I might as well be bugged where I have some control over it. Anyway, it says, going through here in the background, as you requested, that they're pleased to come and talk about, we focused our work on a defense-affiliated programs that use human test subjects between 1940 and 1974. The programs included tests and experiments conducted and sponsored by the Department of the Army, the Navy, the Air Force. The Defense Nuclear Agency, the Central Intelligence Agency, the Department of Energy, the Department of Health and Human Services. The tests and experiments involved radiological, chemical and biological research and were conducted to support weapon development programs, identifying methods to protect the health of military personnel against a variety of diseases and combat conditions, and analyze the U.S. defense vulnerabilities. Folks, they did it to protect the military, not you. They tested it on you. I forgot to mention, actually, this comes up a week later, about to remind you when I was talking about these tests, and I've talked to you about the tests that happened in San Francisco and that bacteria. They thought it was harmless. I was going to mention that in the toxic gas they were putting in New York. It was thought to be harmless. And I forgot to mention so much to talk about, so fast it goes, that remind you about the 1949 or so test. And I did some research back when they had the Class B transformer. They needed that transformer frequency and waveform to activate this. It was a binary weapon. And I found out, it took a little while, but I'm still intrigued by it. And a question came to me in an email, and I was still, well, let me double check on how this worked out. Well, it was interesting that the year before the test started, which I think went to 1952, they're not talking about some of this, but it went to 1952, ABC Corporation bought that installation right before this got happening. I couldn't find any actual connections. I don't have the background to go find any contracts. But that transmitter was end up used while it was owned by ABC Corporation. A little bitty place that had a lot of power in the Bay Area. And that's what I found interesting. The purchase happened right before they did these projects, utilizing a binary electromagnetically instigated infection. It was more than just this little critter they send out. Where do I know that? It's distant memory from a story I read back when they admitted in 76, I think it was, that they had done it. There was a story, and they explained that this was all there. I can't find any of that, as you might think. The internet is like the mandala effect. Keep on going here to read a little bit more. Results in brief. During the World War II and the Cold War era, DOD and other national security agencies conducted a sponsored extensive radiological, chemical, and biological research programs. Precise information on the number of tests and experiments and participants is not available, and the exact number may never be known. Let me roll down. Remember that, because I talked about something last week, and I can't remember now where it is. I wasn't able to keep my notes here so clearly, but it says in there that one of these next paragraphs, that to relieve the problem, here it is, to relieve this problem, to address these problems of not enough information, special efforts have to be made by some involved agencies to help groups of test participants obtain the information necessary to pursue their claims. For example, the Department of Veteran Affairs, VA, relaxed its requirement that participants link their health problem to those tests or experiments. And so, you see, it takes a special act, and what had to happen is that people could link prior things that made a database they could look at. Well, what did I tell you that the OSHA just did for the employers in the last broadcast? They said they don't have to make data. And that put a little bit of a chill in my spine. They're taking away the data that they would that the employer is requiring of the employee. And it spoke right to this. They're taking special effort to block data that can be used in the future. And so there's a whole lot more to read in here. I need you to just see how it gets done against you. To me, it's just like a bunch of new questions to say, well, okay, I got a whole list of things. How are you protecting against this? Where's that? Where's that? You can show that the inadequacy of the current databases that are going on. You can see the history of trying to not create data. It takes special effort that hasn't been done. And there's more and more in this document of only 16 pages. It's really not that much to read, but a lot in it. And they go through and explain that the government will do experiments on people. But here's the point, and I don't know if you missed it or not. I didn't say it till now. Remember, that's all through Title 50. Remember, they have to say it benefits something. They claim that it benefits the military personnel for national security purposes. They get to come and do experiments on people. My question is, how do you not, when you hear this kind of stuff, and if you read more, how do you know that what's going on today, as I tell you, has to come through Title 50 because of gain of function and dual use, that you're not the experiment that we've already identified that you are, but now that we see that the government's willing to tell itself that it does it, and they're pleased to say this stuff, how are we knowing we're not that enemy that they are trying to say we are being tested on for the military that's already been injected anyway? That's already got the micro blood clots that likely a young, healthy man or woman is not going to feel when they're not under stress, that the stress of battle will break. It will be the straw that breaks the camel's back, if you will, in the moment they need to function. Why did the military do that to those people? I don't know. I can't answer this stuff. But do you think I'm a little bit extenuating a little bit of this? I've been talking about the micro blood clots and all this and what it can do. Breaking in just before the broadcast, sent another link. Want to see the effects of COVID shots in autopsies? This is a gentleman, a doctor, who does this for a living, Dr. Ryan Cole of Mayo Clinic, trained board-certified anatomic pathologist, clinical pathologist, as well as he studied immunology and virology. He'll say this on the video at the American's Frontline Doctors White Coat Summit. Dr. Cole revealed the Mockingbird Media corrupt drugs pimps in new, who hasn't said all this stuff that involved himself? Drug pimps in new DC and big pharma do not want you to know. And I would have to say, this is not something you couldn't know. I don't know, folks, listen to the video. How much did I miss? He talks about this protein being the problem. He tells you about the microclots. He's a pathologist. He looks at microscope slides. He sees them. He studies it in his life. He's showing the damage that's going on. You can disregard it. Don't even go check it. But here it is if you want to see it. I don't know that I haven't said everything that he said. He's the official to say so. I would go ahead and give it over to him. He's got the images to show you the differences between what that protein does and what it doesn't. He doesn't say it's a venom. I talk that as the protein is a venom analog. He does say it is the active agent and it is toxic. What the biological process does to take the RNA message and what it creates is a toxin. So here's a video. I also give you a link to the embed video. I couldn't get the video on the website embed. I'll just give you the link to it as well. It's only 13 minutes. He goes through some information. I would have liked to see a more, I guess maybe I don't have the time, but more full presentation so I could see his slides and things. He covers everything that I have, not to say, you know, look at what I've said, but it was all in writings, folks. I've told you, the doctors really aren't the experts. It's anybody who can read what's going on. We read the patents, read how it's all put together. Be honest with what's going on. How can they create this when they don't have the isolate, all that stuff? He tells you what this is, but to me, it's, again, I don't think my venom analog is very far off at all. This is a biological attack, but through a chemical weapon. And I did get an email about glutathione. Thank you for that email. I'll be getting back to you on it. I've just been, again, so much to do. But my thought on that was, I was advised there's more things relative to the glutathione. And there's regimes and people that offer better products than others. So I don't know, I have all that. I haven't checked it all. But more concurrence that there's a potential to counteract this chemical weapon with a chemical antidote, if you will. He talks about the microclots. He talks about also, what did he put down here? He talked about the spike protein being the toxin. my analog to that is like bee venom. It's venom. It's like caterpillar venom. It has all the same symptoms as a protein venom that you would get from an insect or a snake or something. The doctor will tell you, this pathologist will tell you, that this thing dysregulates your immune system. Well, that's another thing we talked about. Can you spell AIDS, folks? I told you, the folks that are making this were the folks that started this back in the 1980s. It didn't start then. That's when they officialized it. And it was all about causing this, I believe, that there was AIDS. That was a lie, too. All this ends up being lies when you look deep enough. But can you spell, it dysregulates immune system. Can you spell AIDS, folks? This is what this thing does. Is that far-fetched? Have I been saying this too far-fetched? Is the pathologist who investigates this stuff far-fetched? Another report all coming this week. Investigation. Official government reports fully vaccinated will develop acquired immunodeficiency syndrome by the end of the year. That's pretty startling. Again, it's hard for me to go back and double-check all this. What was done, though, was someone took the returns of the data and re-looked at it in a different way and looked at the differences between each week, which they do set, they give you the links, you can go look at it. And he analyzes he charts the differences between each week to come up with, and it might be more of a little bit of a jump. I'm not sure if the causation here, but there certainly is the logic that when you look at the jump in the each week, that what you're finding out is there's an adjustment in the immune system response versus relative to the numbers of people that are getting it that have been vaccinated. And you have to look at it that way. I found this very interesting. It needs a lot more scrutiny, but on the surface, it does look like what they are saying. Even if it doesn't say this proves that connection, it is a thing going on, and you can attribute it to what's happening relative to this, if you will, theory. My view on that is that we're seeing some numbers here that aren't talked about in the way they're being done. It does show something. Put that in your computer when you decide whether or not you want to take this. Put that in your computer when you decide that, well, I decided to take it. What do I do now? And I think our immune systems are here to help us if we were to help them. So, or help it, I should say. Projections based on these discussions suggest that 40 to 79-year-olds will have zero COVID viral defense at best, or form a vaccine-mediated acquired immunodeficiency syndrome at worst by Christmas, and all double-vaccinated people over 30 will have completely lost that part of their immune system in which deals with the COVID-19, the symptoms, within the next 13 weeks. Pretty bold statements. We can now check. They're pretty close timing to look. The point is the chart numbers do support this immune system dysfunction week to week as compared with itself. And so I will leave it there. Needs to be more fully checked. There's been a prediction this would be happening. This may be the first tangible data information that may lead us to believe that whether or not it's fatal by Christmas, it is something that's showing itself if you look at the data in relation to itself. But kind of like looking at, well, what happened to influenza all these years, these last year? It disappeared. Well, okay, they're cooking the books. And then we find out that the test doesn't differentiate from influenza. And then there's another thing. It doesn't even differentiate between the coronaviruses. And then I suggest a caution. It's none of that. Because why? It's a synthetic thing. It's simply an instruction code. It's a chemical. It's a construction to a protein. And they packaged it on a Trojan horse to get it in past your body. All the studies are there to say that. So here we have, is AIDS, AIDS, a far reach? No, it looks like there's a study of data that may show us epidemiologically it looks like it might be actually what's going on. Moving over, Colin Powell last week after the broadcast late found out Colin Powell, military guy, first black U.S. Secretary of State, dies of COVID complications amid cancer battle. Comorbidity. He's dead, though. He got the vaccine. They're not going to blame it on that. It's certainly news. Is he a victim of Title 50 that he was the Secretary of State of, that he was actually in the military and watching over the military on? This was happening on his watch as well. Is he a victim of his own ignorance, or who knows what riches he was getting? He certainly didn't help us out in 9/11, if you remember that connection I've been making. Though holding up his little vial with whatever he had in there, claiming this is anthrax or whatever. What a bunch of crime went on with this guy. Military, Title 50, dies from the same weapon. Yeah? Well, we don't know that, right? We can't test for COVID. It's his symptoms. What did he die of? Complications of cancer. Did the comorbidity cause? Was the load on the camel's back that got the snapped? The back got snapped because of this more of this insult. It's not any different. What I just said might be happening to our young, strong men and women in military. When the government and the military never stopped to do what communicable disease law required it to do to keep us safe. And at that point, I get a little bit interested about being a little bit scared. Where's your defenses when you can't defend? I told you, when your health goes down the toilet, you're not concerned about anything. You're just trying to, in this case, get your next breath, aren't you? And you're asking someone that wants to kill you to put a ventilator on that won't help you. To show you how counterintuitive this whole thing. I need air. Oh, give him oxygen, but that'll kill him. They've really thought this thing through. Why won't oxygen help? Because you got a bunch of blood clots that won't allow the oxygen to interface. At least once, your blood then can't do it because it's not interfacing at that level either. It's all blocked off. That's just the blood clotting. And you're fine. You're feeling tired more, but you're fine because you're young and healthy until you go stress yourself. Like many, you'll hear about that video from that doctor, that pathologist. His friend was a surgeon, went out to ride his bike, got the injection, rode his bike, and is dead. Another video, a link to my attention, very interesting little thing, little detail. I have a little problem with this one because it left alone, it implies that vaccines would be good if you solve this potential problem. Can be shown to be more true to be the cause of this thrombotic condition in young people than not. And what it is inadvertent intravenous injections. And as Dr. John Campbell discusses this, I'll leave it to him to discuss it all. The inadvertent intravenous injections, essentially when they put the jab in, done by not a doctor in a parking lot, they aren't too fastidious about where they inject you, that they may be injecting this stuff right into your vein, literally, when it's supposed to go into the muscle. And he's got the evidence to show that when it goes into the vein, when this death juice toxin goes into the vein, it will cause the problems that we're seeing. And what they're not doing is a simple, accurate injection test to find out whether or not it's in a vein or not. There's a simple pullback. If you see blood, you're in a vein, you have to pull back. You got to redo it. You can't go there. You're going to inject it into the vein. They're not doing it. He shows how it's supposed to be done. That, for all of y'all that think you need to get it, you better get your shot from someone who knows what they're doing and watch. I would have never really thought about that, but I've seen it in my life. When they give you some sort of an injection, that's what they do. Intramuscular, not intravenal. Intravenous, right? And he says that's shown in the studies to cause the problems that we're seeing in young folks, young guys in particular. I don't know why that would be, except maybe young guys have more blood vessels in their muscles, notwithstanding that the government will tell you they're not fed by blood. I don't get this. But so if there's more blood, more vessels, because you're stronger, healthier, and all that, more opportunity to go into a vein, I suppose, I don't know, just an idea, trying to make sense of it. An inadvertent placement of the needle jab into a vein, injecting this stuff into the blood system directly causes, there's known problems. My problem again is that it kind of leads to the belief that, well, if I just get it in the muscle, I'll be okay. And so I caution our review of what he's saying. I think it's true. Well, he's got evidence for it. I don't have to think it's true. He's got evidence that could be a really big possibility. I don't know why you're getting the jab in your arm anyway or anywhere else. He says it'd be better in your leg. I don't think the jab's good at all myself, but that's up to all y'all to decide for yourself after you get the information. Be fully informed. And I would ask you, don't take the jab because you're being forced. create the record that lets you stop it. At least give yourself a defensible place. Even if you're still going to lose your job, you have that defensible place and you push forward there. And I think the more people that do that, they're going to have to come to terms with the reality and truth of your rights to do certain things that way. If you lead, as I've been saying, with the demonstrating non-fraudulent exigence, I think ultimately you start going a lot farther. Intravenous injection of coronavirus disease 2019 COVID-19 mRNA vaccine may induce acute myopericarditis in mouse model. Is the link I think he refers to showing that this is a direct correlation? Intravenous injection is really not a thing you want to do. Read the study, understand mouse model is a little different, but we'll just kind of go with it as far as we don't. If you have that model, what's then the safe model? They don't have that. Another problem, as we were talking before, things being found in the vials. International Research Group find tiny sharp metal objects in COVID vaccine. Very frightening is a comment from Rio de Janeiro. The story earlier this week, a press conference was held at the Pathology Institute of Ruttlinger, Germany, on the results of studies on COVID vaccine conducted by Austrian, Japanese, and American research group, and talks about more. I can't remember where I saw it. I thought I saw a video. I've lost the video. They do show microscopic views, and they do show these things, and they talk about them being chemistry, crystals, whatever the shapes, synthetic-looking shapes. They show these shards, if you will, that do look like metal. They do look like metal. On one end, they're jagged, they're sharp, but they're also not quite machined, if you will. And I'm not sure if that's a construct for maybe, let's say, a carbon tube or something that's been formed to come to that point, because it's got that look like it's got a little bit of a, it's made by particles construction. I don't know. That's just what it looked like. I don't have the link. Maybe it's in, you can find it. But there may be some more stuff in these, and only people with microscopes and good ones are now able to see this. And that just goes back to the production. They know they're poisoning you. Does it matter, really? And another point of even if it was a good vaccine and you start finding debris in this stuff, why isn't that part of it? Moving into now what they're finding instead of these vaccines, generic antidepressant drug may reduce COVID hospitalizations. This is simply what we were talking about before. Fluvoxamine is used to treat mental health conditions. Its anti-inflammatory properties can help with this virus. The study, yeah. I don't know if this is the last study I read. We've read one months and months ago. This is this is medication, I think, that's prescriptive. It does pass the blood-brain barrier. Why? It works at the time that ivermectin doesn't. And so we have, again, why things would work and don't work, and this ends up being a chemical deconstruction of the thing that's infecting us, that the protein can pass the blood-brain barrier. You hear that in that pathologist, I think with Dr. Cole, he'll tell you that it does. If you didn't understand it from me when I said it, in 13 minutes, he packages it all up right together. Vaccinated people make up to 75% recent COVID-19 cases in Singapore, but few fall ill. That's the whole point about what their promotion is. Oh, you won't fall as ill, but you become the shedder. You become the problem. You become sick. And I found this interesting that these COVID people become asymptomatic. And so they can blame the asymptomats at some point, but they're actually creating asymptomats. There are people that have the vaccine that don't show symptoms, but that show that they have it. That's not prevention. And when you look at the population that may be affected by the vaccinated for being around them, now you've created the transmission problem for those that would have been otherwise okay. And so I'll just leave this for you. This is out of Reuters. You can see how this all works. It's pretty interesting what's being told to us. As I move into now, what the heck has happened in Denmark? Last month they were talking about, they were lifting all these restrictions, and then the health minister and the Danish health minister demands more vaccinations to avoid new lockdown. What psychopathy and insanity is working that has this? It's like a cop saying, stand up, sit down, show me your ID, don't move, watch out, you're going for a gun, whatever, all this stuff. Danish health minister demands more vaccinations to avoid new lockdown. If you don't understand, these people mean business. And they'll use anything in order to get it on. Danish health minister demands more vaccinations to avoid a lockdown. Again, go to the law. You'll probably find that they can't, they don't have the jurisdiction to order a generic lockdown. They have to go after individual people. And no, everyone's missing this. Despite having vaccinated 85% of its population over the age of 12, Denmark has been has seen more than 1,000 daily cases of COVID for a week straight. So they, you see that they're saying that herd immunity was supposed to kick in at 75. At 85, it's not. And that's if you believe what they're saying, that this is supposed to be doing this. But if you understand that what they're injecting is a chemical weapon causing the problem, why wouldn't the cases keep going up? And so you watch this psychopath, despite the government saying this is no longer a social crisis, the guy comes out just a few weeks later to impose more mandates or lock you down, keep you in your prison, is a psychopathy to the next level. And I don't understand why the first voice out, voices out of everybody is, where is that medical report that says you can impose this on anyone? And where was the due process to make sure that you were right when you said that? And what am I saying? You got a habeas corpus you can write. Now you are, now that thing will work there if they're wrong. And you also, that's also where you get to mitigate, you negotiate the mitigation, no different than you would with this employer nonsense. If you understand what I'm saying, you take what I'm, you learn the lessons of the core action plan for you, and you, that goes wherever you go. And I'm going to say, once you see this a little bit more developed, you'll realize that action plan is applicable everywhere, that there's an administrative imposition, and a lot of times there needs to be an administrative imposition before they are able to put on a judicial, put you in a judicial forum. In other words, one of the remedies would be that this issue is an administrative issue that's not resolved. They've instituted the administrative issue. It's not resolved yet. It's not ripe for a judicial review. You would simply put that as one of potentially numerous pre-plea remedies and avoidance. In this case, where you put in a situation, an administrative review, and they don't have jurisdiction, then you go to a habeas corpus and say, they've got me restrained of my liberty or constructively restrained of my liberty without warrant. That's it. That's all you have to really say. They have, now the burden's on them. Again, it's always looking for the burden-shifting stuff. And so what Danish health minister says, more vaccinations on an 85% vaccination rate. They're still having problems. And nobody can look out and say, well, wait a minute, maybe the vaccinations are causing this. Where has our minds gone as a any kind of a free-minded people anywhere in the world? I really don't know, folks. I start thinking about that. Where are we? And then we're, again, the problem. Did this guy get vaccinated? Is he being affected adversely to come up with this nonsense? Because he's being affected by that very weapon he wants you to get. It's like he's done it, now he's now an agent for it. He's like an alien. He's going to promote it to you. And he's diminished by this thing. Is he being affected by something like what I've talked about? Another option? It's like a fungus that gets inside the worm and then eats through the worm and eventually causes the mind of the worm to say, I got to go climb up this long, tall stalk. And I go and I have no control now, and I climb up the long, tall stalk, and then I clamp on my little legs, and I'm onto it, and right after that I die, and out pops this organ from the fungus, making what we call a mushroom, to seed the spores to another one. Is that what's going on with this guy? Folks, I think it is. I don't think they can say it's not, so I think I'm able to allege. I was talking to somebody this morning, relative to our complaint, explaining a little bit about it. It's quite extensive, but I said, well, all we're doing is alleging, based on reasonable belief, or facts, or whatever we can find in evidence, our reasonable belief a crime is going on. It's just an allegation. The other side can answer if they have to, or whatever. And so we just have to package a plausible, reasonable belief, a probable cause, hopefully, belief when you're talking about a crime. In this case, a reasonable belief would be sufficient to say that we don't know these ministers now who got the vaccination aren't being controlled by it. They're diminished by it. And they're being told by their own interference by the mechanisms, the lack of blood flow, whatever you want to talk, to make certain statements that induce and entice and control the rest of the people. Talk about science fiction. I think there'd probably be a movie out there, wouldn't there be? Talk about science fiction. What's been going on? We're living in science fiction. There's no science behind what's going on. It's all politics. It's all outcomes. It's epidemiological. It's all data-driven. They're cooking the books. It's all the same stuff. But what if this thing is real? And it is. It is this fungal agent that we see in nature. It goes in. It's in many types of organisms, and it goes through it, eats through the body, and then directs the action of the victim, of its host, to go do something, to be able to cause it spread. And the victim is helpless against this. Pretty scary stuff. And I don't know, is this Danish minister going through that? How do you come up with this stuff? And then you don't even follow the law. And no one stops it. Are the rest of them all affected? Oh, he just did that against the law. I'm affected too. Oh, that's okay. I'm going to support him in that because I'm one of these affected people. But I don't have his power, so I don't need to necessarily go climb that. I don't go climb that stalk to go have it grow out of my head. I just need to go after the rest of the herd that's running away. That's my job. And I get to argue that it's a problem when they resist and they run away from me. Beijing dismisses unscientific report on COVID-19 origins by U.S. intelligence community. I don't know why this stuff is kind of fascinates me a little bit. Unscientific. Well, it's pseudoscience. Is it science fiction? But you understand, look at the dynamic. They dismiss the unscientific report. Of course it's unscientific. Origins of the U.S. Intelligence Committee. Well, what are they? They're promoting this thing. Why? Because they're attacking their own people. Is this easy to understand? What would be scientific? It would be that Beijing would actually admit, it's not that it's not scientific, it's that you're not admitting you caused the synthetic thing we use to suggest to you to go stick in your vaccine to go pollute the entirety of your population, in particular your military. You think they're going to say that? No, they're not going to say that. Why would they say that? No, they're going to have this false bickering going on. Of course it's unscientific. There's no science, actually. It's a fraud. Anyway, they can play this game all along. It's up to us to start seeing through it. The U.S. is using, quote, intelligence apparatus instead of science. Folks, the entire operation is intelligence operation. Perception management. Even this story. So these two powers can do what they're going to do. Do you think that Beijing's going to come up and say, no, we got you to induce yourself with a binary weapon. And you fell for it. You didn't even follow your own laws, and we knew you wouldn't. We've been watching. We're not stupid. And we hit you just at the right time. Is a to my mind, it's as plausible as that there's a SARS-CoV-2 that's natural. In fact, that other one's more scary and more plausible to me. But at any rate, we can believe what we want. There's a little fight going on. I found it very interesting. When you look inside of what's going on, realizing this is a synthetic chemical weapon that the United States is using against its own people. I don't know about the international relations. That was behind the suggestion to do underneath the biodiversity treaty and was accepted by every jurisdiction around the world. It's a phenomenal look at the world, a stupidity in my mind. But otherwise, no jurisdiction followed the law once that would have protected them. So please, folks, think about that. Protect, be the 30% that may be the last few that are not going to have their mind distorted, their actions taken away, their behavior changed. Grimner, keep getting better. Hope you're better. Hope you're resting well. Syndicators, thank you very much for what you do. And anybody can spread the word. We need the word. I'm not on Twitter. They permanently disabled my account. That's down for right now. And I'll be with you next week. Tech diffs, or nature willing.
Well, that's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
what opening up a can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.